Good morning, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Once again, we are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell. Steve Cochran at 6. It is Wednesday morning. Wild Card Wednesday for your request. Any artist, any song, whatever you need. Wild Card Wednesday will commence in a little bit. So get your texts in now. 312-981-7200. Wildcard Wednesday, 312-981-7200. All right. My guest right now is an old friend of the show. Boy, he's been doing this show. We haven't had him on. We hadn't had him on for a while, but now he's back on a regular basis. Richard Larmer is the CEO of RLM Public Relations. His website is rlmpr.com. And been in the public relations business for many years, has written many books, and has appeared on my show regularly. It's got to be over 10 years, I would think, at this point. And is always interesting, has interesting takes on what's going on in the world of pop culture and entertainment and more than that. And so we welcome Richard back to the show. Hello, Richard.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Can you remember when you first appeared on my show? It's got to be over 10 years, right, Richard?
It was definitely... There was a five in it, so it was definitely over 10 years ago.
I think it was two. I think it was like 2005.
Yep.
I think so. Like 11 years you've been.
God!
And then we had it. We had a little break here for a little while, but now
yep.
You're back, and
I'm back and better than ever.
So glad to have you back. Once again, tell everybody about RLM Public Relations and a little bit about your background, your books, and stuff.
Sure. So my company is about 25 years old, which is unbelievable, and we are based in New York, and we do public relations and publicity for companies and people all over the world. And my background is that I was a journalist for many years, and then I went into PR quite by accident. And
yeah.
And I've written a bunch of books about trend spotting and about the PR and marketing businesses, one of which is Full Frontal PR, which is being used as a textbook for PR people, and also a book called Punk Marketing, which a lot of people seem to like because it sort of takes the gauze off of how people see marketing these days.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an unusual book.
And you always have your eyes and ears open to what's happening in the world, and we always have fun talking to you.
Yes, we do.
You know, Richard, the last time you were on, you know, we were talking a little bit, as we have many, many times, about the difference between a trend and fad. And if you remember, the last time you were on was right at the beginning of the insanity with Pokemon Go.
Yeah,
and
it's never been more insane than ever.
What has happened since then? Nothing. Like, it's, remember, it was everywhere.
I know, and I have to tell you that there could not be a greater example of a fad than Pokemon Go, because people talked about it and talked about it and talked about it until they were blue in the face, and then moved on to something else, and that is the definition of a fad.
Yeah, yeah, and you called it, too. I mean, if I remember correctly, you said in a month's time, nobody's going to be talking about this, and that's about what happened.
That's, 3 weeks and 3 days.
We did get, I do a segment on the show, Richard, called You Big Dummy.
Yeah.
And we take actual news stories where people do really dumb stuff, and we read them, and they're real news stories.
Wow.
And I do want to thank the fad of Pokemon Go for providing us material for that segment, because the number of people who got busted doing Pokemon Go or drove into a one guy drove into a police car while he was behind the wheel playing Pokemon.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's pretty dumb.
Yeah. And it was funny. My favorite quote of that is he sideswipes the police car, and then he stops the car about a block away. The cops come up, and one of the cops has his camera on. And he records the whole thing, and he walks around to the side, and the driver is getting out, and he's like, is everybody okay? He's like, yeah, and he's holding his phone. The driver's holding his phone. He's like, that's what I get for playing this dumbass game.
You can't make that stuff up. That's
no,
great.
You can't. So, all right, well, let's talk a little bit about some stuff here. Now, you know, I have to say, you know, I review movies here on the radio station, and then my friends Colin and Eric and I talk about it, and we also discuss the box office for the weekend. And only of the three of us, only one of the reviewers here saw Ben-Hur, and it wasn't me.
No.
So I did not see it. But I have to tell you, Richard, when I first heard about and saw the teaser trailer for this current Ben-Hur, Honest to God, I thought it was a joke. I really did.
I did too. Yeah. I did too. I mean, you can't keep making these movies with and just using the titles of old movies and calling it the same movie. It's ridiculous. I mean, you know, at one point or another, somebody has to have an original thought. But Ben-Hur really does look like – it looks like an action-adventure movie that had absolutely no idea what it wanted to be.
Yeah. It's just – I mean, I couldn't believe it. And you talk about how cynicism – the cynicism has seeped in. It has always been a part of the movie industry, but now it's just blatant, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's gotten a little, you know, the fact that people will make a movie about basically anything that people have seen once before, you know, is very cynical. And the Ben-Hur example may really have pushed us over the edge, because when you think about it, I mean, that movie made absolutely no money and cost a fortune.
Yep.
And, you know, could bring down a studio for all we know. But I wonder about the meetings that took place to make that movie. You know, oh, we're going to remake Ben-Hur, but mm-hmm. we're going to do it like it happened today.
Yeah. And I seriously cannot fathom how it got. I mean, Richard, do you have any theories as to how anybody would okay this project?
Yeah, it's always about packaging. You know, they had the right director, the right producer, the right actors, and, you know, one agency packaged the whole thing. They had the rights to Ben-Hur. You know, somebody was going to make it eventually, so they just decided to greenlight it. And you just never know what goes on. I mean, look, I saw probably the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life the other day.
Okay.
The Fangs.
The which one?
The Fangs with Nicole Kidman.
Oh, the Family Fang.
Family Fang.
Yes,
right.
Jason Bateman.
I couldn't even remember the name.
Jason Bateman's movie. Yeah.
It's just, I mean, you know, how did that movie make it through? I mean, I couldn't even get. I 15 minutes into it, and I was like looking for things to poke my eyes out with. And what is it with Nicole Kidman? She must have really terrible management, and everything she does lately,
yeah,
has been just awful.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but to talk about some of the stuff, the unoriginality,
yeah.
In Hollywood is sort of breathtaking. But I do say this on the other end, Richard. I thought the Loose remake, and I'm saying Loose, because the original Pete's Dragon was such a piece of crap.
Yeah, it's true.
But this new Pete's Dragon was really wonderful, and I went in with the lowest expectations, thinking the same stuff. You know, oh God, another terrible remake. Oh God, here we go. And it turned out to be a pretty exquisite family film that, oddly enough, again, Richard, nobody went to see.
Well, of course, because nobody remembers it. You know, they were. It was either that or Herbie. You know, Herbie
right.
remaking Herbie again.
Right.
So Disney has a lot of old movies that didn't do very well that I'm sure they're going to just remake constantly. And I remember the old Pete's Dragon. I mean, it really was a terrible movie. So yeah. I'm really happy to hear. You're the only person I know on earth that's seen it.
No, and it's really too bad. And nobody has seen it. It's a really wonderful film. One of the biggest surprises of. Of
wow.
the summer, like really beautiful, and to the point where I think when people rediscover this movie, or I should say discover it, because nobody's seen
yep.
it, but when it comes out on DVD and people will show it to their families, I really think that years go by, it's going to be, you remember the film, I'm sure you do, Richard, the film Iron Giant?
Sure, of course.
Now that bombed at the box office, but
right.
has since become a favorite because it's so good. The same thing, I predict, the same thing is going to
wow.
happen to this version of Pete's Dragon.
You mean people are going to go like Rocky Horror Show at midnight and put their newspapers over their head? And...
Yeah, it's going to turn into a cult classic. That's what's going to happen.
Lots of people dressed up as dragons. It's going
yeah.
to be great. I can just see it now.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I also wanted to mention, you know, the advertising for Ben-Hur. Have you seen some of the how they've advertised?
That's what made me wonder whether or not it was real.
Yeah. Yeah, I found the advertising to be really ridiculous. I know that they were trying to get the young audience,
mm-hmm.
you know, by making it look like it's action-packed and, you
mm-hmm.
know, all that stuff, and it's 3D.
Yeah, boy.
And then I think they were trying to get the faith-based audience, too, because they come out in droves to see some of these films.
Well, you know, that's not happening anymore. I was looking at, you know, Heaven is for Dogs and all these other movies that have been coming out recently.
Right.
They're not doing as well as they did when Mel Gibson first started these. And the faith-based audience has got their hands, arms folded. I think they're a little annoyed with some of the ways that marketers have been taking advantage of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't work anymore. But yes, and also I felt like the Ben-Hur people really wanted to be all things to all people because they wanted the Ben-Hur, you know, the original Ben-Hur fans, the purists to come and see it too, because they had a semblance of the original story in those ads, and I thought, wow, they just want to be everybody's favorite new movie.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And in addition to that, in addition to trying to have their cake and eat it too by trying to cover every possible audience, my favorite quote that I've seen from a quote unquote critic, and now as you know, Richard, anybody who's got a blog is quoted on these things.
Yep.
And but my favorite was, and I don't know who to attribute it to, just one of the many, you know, quote unquote critics out there. But it said, "It's Gladiator meets The Fast and the Furious." I'm not kidding. That's an actual quote that they used to advertise Ben-Hur.
Oh my goodness! So I thought it was Gladiator meets The Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead. Yes. Anytime you can mention The Walking Dead, you know. You got to do that because it's the, you know, it's the thing to do now.
It's the only thing people see.
Yeah, and it is. It's true. But it, you know, I mean, it was Paramount. They put up over $100 million, and then I don't know how much in advertising. I think it was probably about $80 million in advertising.
Yeah, it was about $80 million in marketing. I saw that.
They dropped about $200 million on this movie. It made like $12 million over the weekend.
Yeah, it's a write-off.
It's a write-off. What's interesting is that, you know, the only, because Paramount's been having a rough year. The only hit that they had was that crazy little John Goodman movie, the 10 Cloverfield Lane, where they're in the fallout shelter. That's
Cloverfield.
Yeah, that was like their one sort of solid.
That was it. Wow.
Yeah, that's it. It's a good movie, though. I will say that it is good.
Well, I'm glad to hear it because they need something to talk to their board of directors about.
Exactly. All right, Richard, hang on, okay.
Okay.
Richard Larmer is with us, CEO of RLM Public Relations. You can check out his website at rlmpr.com. We have a link on our Facebook page, and we're going to talk more about pop culture and stuff. We're also going to cover a little bit of we'll do a little Emmy preview and get Richard's thoughts on some of those nominees and more. All right, all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 o'clock. Coming up in a little bit, Esmeralda is going to shop, and we are going to find out, would Esmeralda buy that? We'll do another edition of that. That's coming up. But right now, Richard Larmer is with us, our old friend. He's CEO of RLM Public Relations, and we're talking all things pop culture, and he's always got a very interesting take on that stuff. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, by the way, for Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, 312-981-7200. Check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show, and best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Richard, welcome back.
Hello there.
All right. What did you think of, I don't know how much of the Olympics you watched, but what did you think of the Olympics and the Olympic coverage? And then we'll get to the Locked Key thing too.
Yeah, well, the Olympic coverage was strange at best because they, you know, all the time shifting that NBC was doing for, you know, for its sponsors really, I think, hurt. I mean, really, we're talking about Brazil, which is hardly any time difference at all, and they seem to be more interested in having things at prime time. And the funny thing is watching CBS News at 6:30 and having them tell you who won.
Yeah. People were so mad about that. People were so mad.
I know.
Yeah.
It's always going to be that way. And NBC never learns its lesson. There were some good stories, but there were too. It was a little too dramatic. The little scenes that they showed of the actors of the athletes.
That's a Freudian slip right there, Richard.
Everybody's, you know, homespun story. Every time they told one, it's like, you know, he had no gym. He had to work out, you know, beating up his brothers, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they always try to make it very dramatic. I have to tell you, quite honestly, Richard, I didn't watch 1 minute of the Olympics.
Oh, my goodness.
I successfully avoided 16 days of the Olympics.
Wow. I only watched the gymnastics and the swimming, but that was enough for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, how do you – so the coverage you think was – how do you think Acostas did?
Oh, Casas is great.
Yeah.
You know, he's a perennial. It's good to see him, you know, still propped up and still doing what he does.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's the sort of saving grace of that whole thing, because I feel like he's being himself.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to a lot of these other, you know, Olympic announcer wannabes who just, you know, drone on and on and on.
Yeah.
But it was all about Lochte.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, ultimately, what happened with these guys, and what came out of it. Now he's lost a lot of sponsorships, including Speedo.
All of his sponsorships.
Yeah. So how do you feel about this and the coverage of it and the story itself? It's kind of a strange one.
You know, I was, the first time I heard about it, I thought, well, this will be investigated and they'll find out what really happened. And no one did it. No one investigated. That was really the strange, from a media point of view, you know, they made these pronouncements, or at least he did, and no one went and actually looked to see, you know, who could have done this. The only investigation was done by the officials, but no journalists went. They just took him for his face value.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really, you know, it was yet another example of sort of the laziness of the modern media, where they just, you know, one person says something and they say it, you know, loud enough and people just buy it. I think that, you know, I've seen Lochte before in lots of interviews, and he's an idiot. So there's no other way to put it. So whatever comes out of his mouth is probably, you know, something that, you know, from, I don't know, maybe he's just drank too much of the water in the pool. But no one bothered looking into it until the Rio officials said this is not a true story. Then people started looking into it.
Mm-hmm.
But to take something that, you know, it was pretty horrific when you think about it, being held up at gunpoint during in an Olympic town.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about a smear on Rio. Of course they were going to investigate it. I mean, I don't know what this guy was thinking.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the end, it ended up being a circus like everything else.
Absolutely. Now, how do you think he handled it? And what about his people? I mean, you would think that, you know, like Lochte's people would be like, you need to say this, you need to say that. I mean, there had to be some damage control that had to be done that wasn't.
Only afterwards. He didn't have any people. He hired Matthew Hiltzik, who handles most problems in Hollywood these days, after the boys, the other swimmers, were taken off the plane, and it looked like he was going to be caught. So he hired him, and that apology was written by Hiltzik.
Oh, it was.
And yeah, and everything he said was basically prepared, and you know, they rehearsed it to death, so that he could actually, you know, remember his lines.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he sort of got what he deserved in the end, because the last thing Rio wanted was to find out that something like that was really true, because it would have been the only thing that people, well, it probably will be the only thing people remember from this Olympics anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I'm not particularly a big, obviously I didn't watch any of the Olympics this year, so I'm not a big Olympic person, but I did. I will say this, that when the Olympics started, the week it started, I had a really, really busy week.
And
I did miss a lot because I was at a horror film convention for a whole weekend. I missed the opening ceremonies and all that stuff. Normally I would have watched that, but I had other stuff I had to do. But I will say this, at least Costas, who I love, he didn't get pink eye this time.
Yes, he didn't. It was good. He stayed healthy, and he wasn't showing his age. It was good. It was all good.
Yeah, and I just keep thinking, you know, like as I read about the coverage and all of the things that were happening. Now Rio is obviously a lot different, but our city here was up for consideration for these Olympics.
Yes,
and I remember back in 2009 when they had the big, you know, rally at Daley Plaza.
No, boy,
and we were the first city that was eliminated. I remember watching it on TV and laughing and clapping, because I swear to God, had we been, you know, the winner of that and had these, I would have been away for 2 weeks.
Everything would have been rented out. It would have been horrendous. I'll tell you, I like hearing now that most cities are backing away ever since Sochi, because they realize that it doesn't do anything. It really does nothing to bolster. Doesn't bolster tourism. Doesn't bolster the economy. Doesn't really do anything but cost the taxpayers a lot of money locally.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the end, I think these games have become, just like everything else, you know, a big blockbuster in the middle of of an election year, yet another thing that to take people's minds off what's really important.
Right. You know, now, so what do you think? We've talked many times on the show about, you know, celebrity damage control when celebrities get into trouble, because it happens so frequently. Yeah. Now, how does Lotke follow this up?
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the things that I've been thinking a lot about this whole Lotke thing is that, you know, there's so much film of what really happened. There's so much, you know, you can see him going ballistic. What he did in the end was he apologized, but he never explained his motivation for what he did. In other words, why he got him, you know, what was in him to get intoxicated and threaten that guy and make all that damage. So in a sense, it was all very empty. And the film speaks for itself. I mean, I'm amazed, really, no joke, not even Casablanca shocked, but really shocked that a celebrity would think that they could get away with anything with all the cameras everywhere.
Right.
You know, since 9/11, there have been cameras placed everywhere. To think that, you know, somehow you're in public and you say one thing, it's going to be proven that something else happened. And I'm still surprised when a celebrity says, no, this is how it happened, when it's already been caught on tape.
Yeah, it's true. And it's not just the security cameras and the cameras that are everywhere. Now everyone has a camera.
Yeah.
Every single person on the planet has a camera.
Yep.
And you will be recorded if you're walking outside. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, there's a camera obviously in everybody's phone, but the security cameras are everywhere. You look around, just walk down the street, look around. They're security cameras for every light alley, dark alley, and so when somebody, well, I guess in the end it was Lochte, so you have to realize. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw his reality show that he did for E.
I didn't. I've never seen it. I know of it. I've seen clips. What was the setup? Was it just?
What would Ryan Lochte do? Was the name of it?
Uh-huh. God.
And the answer? Nothing.
And it was on. Was it on? Very long.
Oh, no, I think it lasted like 4 episodes and then they canned it. It was ridiculous. He first of all had nothing to say. There are great interviews with him where he has absolutely nothing to say. It's just chlorine in that head. That's it.
Now, you know, really quickly, you're talking about the E. It just seems to me that those shows, the Kardashians and all the other shows that are on E, is it just me, or are they kind of slipping in popularity? Are they running out of steam?
They are slipping. I saw some of the ratings recently, and a lot of those shows are slipping. I think that people, even the Real Housewives, are slipping. I think, and they're very popular with women. At least that's what I'm told. But I think a lot of them are dimming because people are much more interested in the how-to shows now. You know, the Tiny House Nation and how to build a, you know, a seesaw, things like that. Those are the ones that are gaining, and these dramas, these sort of fake dramas that are called reality TV, are dimming. Thank God.
Yeah. Does Seacrest basically produce all of them on E? Is it his production company that churns them out?
Seacrest produces every single television show on Earth. There's nothing that his hand isn't in. I don't know. I believe that he's been cloned, and that there are something like 1,000 Seacrests running around, and
right.
They're all producing every single television show, bar none, is produced by Ryan Seacrest.
Well, now, you know, now evidently last season was the end of American Idol.
Until it gets revived.
Right.
Like Cats did.
Right. So we won't see, maybe we won't see Ryan Seacrest on TV as much for the next few months. But at some point, I mean, you got to know, you got to think that American Idol is going to come back.
It has to come back. And the thing is that Seacrest has this deal with NBC now to be on camera. So he'll do something American Idol-esque for NBC now that he's with them. And he'll, you know, they'll have to bring American Idol. I can't imagine. I mean, American Idol has been so much a part of this culture. I thought it was shocking they took it off the air.
Yeah.
But, you know, take it off the air for a couple of years and then bring it back and call it a revival and go from there.
And the ratings will boost. They'll spike. People will be like, oh, no, American Idol is back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where was it? It was gone forever.
Yeah, 18 months. All right, Richard, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Richard Larmer is with us, PR expert, all-around great guy. RLMPR.com is the website. We have a link on our Facebook page. We're going to come back and talk about the Emmys and more on WGN. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5. We've got Wildcard Wednesday coming up soon, so get your requests in. Any artist, any song, you play it. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And another edition of Would Esmeralda Buy That, also coming up this morning. Right now, we are talking with Richard Larmer, who is the CEO of RLM Public Relations, joins us regularly to just talk, chit-chat about pop culture and what's happening in the world. Richard, welcome back.
Thank you.
The Emmys are coming up.
Yes, they are, as usual.
September 18th. How do you feel about Jimmy Kimmel, first of all, as a host?
Well, I remember the last time he was the host, and he wasn't great. He had a lot of gags, but he didn't quite pull it off. You see, the thing with the Emmys is that it's one big self-congratulatory congratulation, and they're basically a sort of one award for every show that's on television right now. Unlike the Oscars, which I think go a little further these days and trying to bring in the indies, so to speak, I looked at the list of Emmys, and when you do 8 per category in some cases, I mean, basically you're just anybody who's gotten press coverage will get an Emmy nomination.
Yeah, I think it is kind of ridiculous how there are so many nominees.
It's ridiculous.
It is. It's too much. And on top of that, I always find it weird now that they can slip in, oh, this is now, quote unquote, this is a mini series.
Yeah, what was that? The limited series.
Yeah.
That really cracks me up. I mean, isn't everything a limited series in a sense?
That's true. But like something like American Horror Story, which is a series.
It's a series.
But they call it like a mini series because it's different stories every time. And, they got away with that. And the other thing is that now, as much as I loved The People versus O.J., which I think The People versus O.J. Was one of the best things I've seen on TV all year.
Yeah, me too.
But they put it under limited, so it could probably get more awards.
Yes, the whole idea of this limited, and it's interesting because the limited series is 10 or 11 episodes,
right?
Which is really what most cable shows are anyway. But I feel bad for the people that made TV movies because it's limited series or movie.
That's right, exactly.
So they didn't, used to be just outstanding actress in a movie,
right?
And those people got sort of steamrolled. But I will say, Master of None.
I loved Master of None. I absolutely loved it. Aziz Ansari was, he wore all the hats on that show.
Sure did.
I mean, wrote and produced it. He directed a bunch of episodes. And I was just so happy to see Noelle Wells have such a great role.
Yeah.
Because I really love her. And I loved her. She was a very limited use on SNL. And I remember really, right out of the gate, like really liking her a lot, especially her Lena Dunham. She does a remarkable Lena Dunham impression.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Having Master of None get any nominations, but so many, really surprised me because that was not, sort of like, somebody getting something they really deserved in a sea of mediocrity.
Yeah. Well, there's some stuff on Netflix that I really am a fan of. I thought Judd Apatow's Love was great.
I was just opening my mouth to ask you about Love. I really, really enjoyed that show.
I did, too. And I think Gillian Jacobs, between this and the improv movie that Mike Birbiglia made, Think Twice, she's having a stellar year.
Yeah, she really is. She's so good in Love, and it's so funny because she's so different from what you expect from her.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah,
now, have you seen BoJack Horseman?
I haven't, but everybody talks about it.
You, Richard, you have to see it.
I did see the poem that the producer wrote about Marge Simpson.
I know, we were just talking about that yesterday on the show. It's heartbreaking, and that tone, by the way, Richard, dominates BoJack Horseman.
Oh, then I must watch.
It's right up your alley. You got to trust me on this. I know you, Richard.
I will watch it. No, I thought the poem was really the poem had me sort of grasping at my heart.
Yeah, Yeah. Now the OJ thing, you know, the People versus OJ, the FX series was extraordinary, I thought. And if Sarah Paulson doesn't win, I'm gonna.
Well, Sarah Paulson will win. There's always one, you know, there's always one sort of, we call them the, you know, the Julianne Moore role, where you know that based on the fact that she did such a great job impersonating somebody who I think must have been very hard to impersonate, you know. And, yeah, Sarah Paulson will absolutely win. And she's got a lot of competition, but it doesn't really matter.
You know, here's the other thing about it. For me, the two best things that I saw on television all year so far, and I don't think anything is going to be better, are the FX series with OJ and the ESPN documentary Made in America.
You know, I loved Made in America, and also what I loved about it was how difficult it was to watch it.
Yes, yes. You know, I watched it all in 3 days,
wow.
I couldn't turn it off, and I was astounded by it. And I really think it's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. Ever.
It was so, I mean, they had so much time to tell the story.
Yep.
They didn't just tell OJ's story. They told the story around him,
yep.
Which, you know, the world that he was a part of. And to me, no documentary gets that kind of time. So they really, and watching it just reminded me of all those just terrible things that happened in the 90s in L.A. And not just OJ, but, you know, and so many
yeah.
other facets of God.
It was a stunning piece. And it's interesting how they marketed this thing or how they're doing it, because it's going to be eligible for the Oscars as best documentary.
Oh, did it play in the theater?
It did. Yeah, it debuted, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it debuted at Sundance.
Wow.
And I think it played in theaters in New York for a little while, or L.A. maybe. And so it is for consideration as best documentary. So it's eligible for next year's Emmys.
Wow.
So it could cover both of them. Like, it could get an Oscar in February and then be nominated for an Emmy in the summer.
It'll be an EGOT.
Exactly. It's a TV show that's an EGOT. Exactly. Now we just have to do, you know, Richard, you and I, we got to get together and do a Broadway musical to make sure we get the T of the EGOT. I wanted to mention before we let you go, I don't know if you've seen this. I saw on TMZ, and I thought we'd end on something really goofy. I don't know if you've seen Mickey Rourke challenging Lenny Dykstra from the Philadelphia Phillies to a fight.
Isn't Dykstra in prison?
He got out of prison.
I will watch. I will watch it immediately, because that sounds like my kind of a good time.
Exactly. All right, Richard, always a pleasure. And we'll talk to you next month, okay?
Take care.
Take care. There you go. Richard Larmer, everybody. Really fun guy to talk about, you know, pop culture stuff with. He is RLMPR. That's his website, and you can check him out on Twitter, @Larmer, LAERMER. All right, Nick DiGilio here. We got a break here for the news.